I can't believe you had to go to HMRC about a boob job.
Oh, yeah, it was.
That was probably the, I know people that work in HMRC. I bet that was the most confusing thing they'd ever had to deal with in their life.
Oh, it was. Yeah, it was.
Rachel Harris is disrupting what it means to be an accountant, a business owner, and an employer in 2023. She is a TEDx speaker, a content creator, an author, a business owner, and most importantly, an accountant. Rachel adds value to her audience of 30,000 followers by creating completely free long and short form content, delivering financial education. Rachel is extremely passionate about providing free financial education as the founder of Instagram account Accountant She, the founder of StriveX Accountants, and now the founder of StriveX Mortgages. So welcome to the studio, Rachel. Now I've got sidetracked with other things that I was thinking about then, like viral boob jobs. Boob jobs, Botox, and all the wonderful things that stereotypical accountants never have to deal with, but you somehow have made it like your niche and the thing that you, I guess, thrive off of. I guess it makes your little bit, job a little bit more interesting, right?
100%. I'm a 90s kid. Like, this is how I consume content, right? Like, I watched you on Love Island. Now you're a client. So I feel like it's such testament to one of the best bits about working in finance, or specifically becoming an accountant, is that you can choose who you work with. Like, you could pick any industry in the world, from Formula One all the way through to content creation and influencers, and say that's what I'm going to do.
That's something they don't teach you in school when you say you want to become an accountant.
Oh, I was literally told by a careers advisor not to become an accountant because it was boring.
Why do I feel like careers advisors really aren't that good at their job? So why did you want to become an accountant? Because, you know, it's quite obvious you're not what I would stereotypically picture an accountant to look like.
Yes, we call them the stale pale males, and they have brown carpet. And like, that's very much what I thought being an accountant was. And I guess the short answer is I did loads of those. You know, when you're at school, the careers advisors make you do like a personality test.
Oh God, yeah.
All of them came out as accountant. Like, if you Google ISTJ, which is basically an introvert, they tell you to become an accountant. So I'm just an introvert who's pretty good at maths. And every single thing came out and told me to become an accountant. And so I literally picked it off a list and was like, sure.
Is it hard to be introverted if you're very client facing though?
I also feel like I'm an extra, like an introvert in disguise. And I actually more recently feel like I'm not an introvert. I actually feel like as I've grown and the business has grown, I've been surrounding myself with the wrong people.
Yeah, cool. Because I was going to say, you're like, obviously I follow you on social media and you do not come across like an introvert at all, with all of like the pink and like, it looks very flamboyant.
Yes.
So yeah, that's why I was like really surprised when you said that.
But it's very much about how you lose or drop energy, right? Like, I can do all of those things and have a personality and do them all. Just need to sit in a dark room afterwards.
We've all been there where you need to recharge that social battery. But, you know, I've did like a little bit of research on you and things, and I was really surprised to know that you didn't go to university straight away.
Yeah.
Because when you think about like your career path, you automatically assume that you must have gone to like some big Russell Group university 100%. At the age of 18, or that you came from a wealthy family that of accountants and things like that. But for you, that's not the case at all.
Not the case. No. So I really wanted to go to university. I was very bright at school, did really well at school. I was a young carer. So I'm an identical twin. Have always, literally since birth, been a carer for my sister. And so going to university was not on the cards for me. And so, yeah, I did my A-levels. I wanted to get good backing. I knew that some sort of like further education would probably be on the cards for me in the future if my personal circumstances ever changed. And so I did A-levels and then went straight from A-levels into an apprenticeship. And so I was definitely an apprenticeship baby. So started my first ever accounting exams. I was like going to night school at the same time as doing a business admin apprenticeship at my local council. And I was paid the apprenticeship minimum wage. I was paid £3.23 an hour. And so what that meant was I wasn't actually able to put 100% into my day job because I was working in pubs, clubs, nightclubs, evenings and weekends. Like, I literally used to do 9 to 5, go to night school 5 till 7, and then work from like 8 till 2 a.m, you know, 3-4 nights of the week to be able to afford to get the bus to work.
That's insane. Yeah. But like, that's not sustainable for many people, yeah, right?
No.
Like, how long did you manage to do that for?
Yeah, and this is the thing. Like, I literally did it, I think 18 months, 2 years. And then that was a huge, huge motivation for me to just like pass my exams faster, work harder, do more. Like I was finishing apprenticeships that you're supposed to be on for like 18 months in 6 months, literally because I was so financially motivated. Like I literally used to say to the people, like, can I do it faster? Like how many exams can I take in one go? Like how can I do this as fast as possible? And it literally was, I was miserable. All of my mates went off to university. They wore like hoodies with their uni name on. And I was not in a club. Like I was going to night school and they were doing Jaeger bombs on a Tuesday night. £2 for £5. It was rubbish.
Do you know what, actually, like there's very few people that I've actually been able to like say that I relate to that too. I mean, I was very fortunate. I wasn't on an apprenticeship minimum wage.
Yep.
So I didn't have to like go work in pubs and clubs, but you know, people don't realize that sacrifice that you make at 18 to do an apprenticeship.
Yeah.
But when you're older,
oh my gosh, yeah. It was like the tortoise and the hare, right?
Yeah.
Like I was pretty miserable. Not doing egg bombs on Tuesdays. Go to night school, doing all of the exams. And for the 3 years that all of my friends are at uni, it's pretty rubbish. And again, that's a huge part of my mission now is to like turn it into a club, not going to university. But suddenly they were all graduating and suddenly they were going into jobs that I was in 3 years ago. Suddenly my career was... like my salary was three times what they were on. They were earning graduate money and I was earning actual real life adult money. I had a great car. I understood how to save because I was in the financial industry and I didn't come from privilege. I was a free school meal child. Neither of my parents worked in professional services and only one of my parents worked. That wasn't the background that I came from, but suddenly I had exposure to, I was competing with the kids that came from privilege all of a sudden. It was amazing.
Because I think a lot of, I think one of the reasons why I started this podcast is because I'm not able to physically answer every single question that I get in the DMs, right? And loads of people were like, oh, you know, I'm really worried about how I'm able to be successful or be in certain positions at work if I don't go to university or if I do an apprenticeship and things like that. And there are times where, it will suck. Like I said, I can't stomach Jaeger anyway, but doing Jaeger bombs on a Tuesday or like my friends are going on.
Or making
like,
new friends.
Yeah.
Wait, like, you're like in that phase
sport.
Of life, right?
Yeah. Like my friends were still playing sport and going out and all these things. And I was sat in a really dingy office in London.
With people
where it was
way
raining.
Older than you that you're like, what did you do this weekend, Karen? What have you got for lunch? Like, rubbish.
Someone explained to me what the menopause was on my 21st birthday. And well, I mean, I know what it is, but like,
I was really
21, but they really went in depth and I was sat there like, I'm absolutely terrified. Yeah. Please let me go out so I can drink. But like, no, I think, and it's, but even though you didn't go to university and you had to like manage all of these commitments and as well as being a carer, you still ended up training at a really big accountancy firm, right?
Yep.
I didn't even know these things existed. I literally knew about the Magic Circle law firms and that was it. But it would make sense to have all these big accountancy 100%. Firms.
Competing against each other on a big list every year. Great.
I mean, it sounds right. Like it sounds self-explanatory, but how did you go from working a minimum wage apprenticeship job into ending up into like the top 75 accountancy firms?
Yeah, really good question. So I tried to with every single job role. I was like collecting job titles. So I literally made it my mission from the word go. Like, can you look down my CV or even now like my LinkedIn profile and see growth and progression with every single jump up? So like I was grabbing job titles as fast as I could get them. So apprentice to junior to accountant to senior accountant. I once had the job title of semi-senior. I used to get called the semi. It was awful. But I literally was like, get me the next job title, even if it's half one, I'll take that, like, get me on it. And that led me to a top 75 practice, which is where I did the majority of my training. That's where I met my now husbands. We're life partners and business partners. We run the business together. And yeah, that was a whole experience on its own. And again, the timeline and the series of events that led me to being self-employed has driven a huge amount of values and the reason I run the practice the way I do now.
It's, I guess like, well, when you think about these big firms and the stereotypical people that are there, you also think about the young boys club. So there must have been an element of young boys club in these firms you were working
in. The drinking culture.
Yeah.
Honestly. Yeah. I'm teetotal now. I'm 4.5 years sober.
Oh, wow. Congratulations.
Like, thank you very much. And I actually drank when I was at the top 75.
Okay.
And I would say the toxic drinking culture there actually played quite a huge part in me wanting to go sober.
Oh, wow.
It was because like, I don't do well under peer pressure. And actually for me, sobriety is a full stop.
Yeah.
I tried saying, oh, I'll just have one. But then that-
It never happens. Yeah.
It's not one. So for me, yeah, sobriety was a full stop that I think I needed in that sentence. But again, that toxic drinking culture is huge. And it's very, very much that's how promotions are fed up. That's how pay rises are like, that's how really key decisions are made. And so it's really difficult to navigate that in your 20s, especially when, if you've not gone to university, you're 3, 4, 5 years younger than anybody else that you're with.
Yeah.
You're still trying to keep up and make the right decisions through doing that. It's really difficult.
Would you say that was like the biggest challenge for you going into those firms?
I think imposter syndrome was huge. The biggest thing for me in the top 75 was there was no female leadership.
Okay.
Like no female partners. There was one woman who was management, and no female partners.
It's one of those things, isn't it? Like I always get asked all the time, why do young women not pursue careers in politics? And it's because you don't see, you can't, there's no one that looks like you always taken a path similar to you.
Yeah. And you do. I firmly believe as young people, you can only be what you can see. And I literally left that firm because I couldn't see what progression looked like. And not just progression, like blow the doors off, grab that job title progression, which is very much my personality type.
Yeah.
And yeah, couldn't see it.
Do you think that's why, one of the reasons why so many big firms lose such untapped talent then?
Oh yeah. And they now work for me.
Well, going on to that, I was about to ask you how you grew your accountancy firm from your dining room table onto, was it a team of 18, you said now, in 3 years?
Yes, we just
years.
Had our 18th job offer accepted, yeah.
I don't know if I, you're obviously a better woman than me. I couldn't deal with the pressure of knowing 18 people were relying on me for their livelihoods. But like, how did you go from that dining room table to all of a sudden having this big team?
So we actually have an employee waiting list.
So, oh, wow, okay.
I woke up this morning and just checked. It's just, literally just like a Google Drive. It's nothing fancy. I'm really stingy. Yeah, we have this employee waiting list. And I woke up this morning and the 99th person joined the employee waiting list.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so we have an employee waiting list of 99 people.
How do you filter that list?
It is literally a constant filtering process. So as soon as somebody joins, we're sort of like scoring them to understand where they would sit in terms of priority levels. And again, like we are accountant running a business, it's very strategic growth, it's very measurable.
Yeah,
it was predictable now. Like I can measure the pipeline that's coming into the business. So on an average month, we would take in like £110,000 worth of new work every single month. That is therefore like between 2 and 3 brand new members of staff every single month. But because I can leverage that pipeline through social media content creation, all of that, combine that with I've got a waiting list of unhappy people at rubbish firms,
yeah,
on the waiting list who have consumed every bit of content that I've ever put out there, from a day in the life of their colleagues all the way through to us doing TikTok Tuesdays and Fun Fridays. And they know that we go on an all-inclusive holiday to Mallorca every year. And like they understand the benefits package and they've watched this content. Most frequently asked question we get when we're interviewing is that reality? Like, is it real?
I have never heard of any business having an employee waiting list. Like I'm actually like, my brain has just gone. But you did send me a video of you guys painting candles on your lunch break.
Yeah.
So I was like, God, can I join?
Yeah.
I want to paint candles on my lunch break. Yeah. I had to just sit at my desk and eat prep. Yeah. Like, that was literally my reality. But I mean, being an award-winning employer sounds easy, but when did you know it was the right time to take on your first employee?
Good question. So, and it's worth noting, our first employee, who's still with us now, joined at our dining room table.
Oh, nice.
And I remember saying to
really
James,
family vibes.
Literally like us, the Black Labrador, cat asleep on the table. And I remember saying to James, I think we need to get employer's liability insurance because he's going to hurt his back, like slumping over our dining room table. Like it's not always been a vibe. And the reality is very different to what it is now. We had shed quarters. We converted our shed into an office and we had 6 of us working. Like this was during COVID as well. Our driveway looked like a car park. Like we were pretty sure like neighbors reported us to the council. It looked like we were having a party. There's just so many people. And so yeah, for us it was very, very much. So I didn't go to university. I did my accounting exams. I qualified. And then I always knew, like I always had that imposter syndrome of not going. All of these people I was comparing myself to wrongly. Now I look back, but like I was comparing myself to them. And it really felt like I missed. I think because I desperately wanted to go and the decision not to go felt outside of my control.
Yeah.
It was always something that was on my list. And so I went to a university and said, I didn't go to university, but I am an accountant.
Yeah.
Would you accept my accounting qualifications in place of a degree and let me onto a master's? Would you let me do an MBA, which is a master's in business? Mm-hmm. And first of all, they said no. And I was like, can we try again? Like, can you ask can I speak to the manager, please? Like, can you just ask again?
The Karen of university.
Yeah, literally, like, please, can I try again? And they said, yeah, okay, sure. If you can sit a GMAT, which is the admissions test for a master's, we'll let you in. And so I did it, passed it, got in, and then did a master's program. And so for us, the growth, the positioning, the market segmentation, the reason we create the types of content we do in certain pillars directed towards certain like target markets, that's all very, very strategic. And so for us, the scaling has been very strategic from day one. We took every single thing that we learned from being at a top 75 and internally almost franchised the business from the word go, which meant that it was just this movable object that we could scale from one man band dining room table. 3 years later, we're documenting the journey to hitting £1 million for the first time. Payroll bills, £500,000. Like,
wow. Do you know, like, it must have been really scary for that other person to like come on to work for you.
He had offers from top 10. He was, so because I was an apprentice, I was an apprentice baby, I knew from day one, like apprenticeships, and again, loads of stigma and misconceptions around what an apprenticeship is. So we knew we always wanted to like fully fund everybody's training programs whilst not paying the apprenticeship minimum wage, like paying them. We pay 10% above market rate. So we always knew we wanted that embedded into the firm. And he was working in Waitrose before he started with us. And he was going to night school. He was doing AAT and he's in his 30s. And again, I was really keen for it not to be a stereotypical. I wanted to prove to people that apprenticeships don't just mean Gen Z school leavers. Yeah. They could be whatever you want it to be. And so, yeah, he walked in and he literally had offers from top 100 practices. And like, he chose us. He literally turned up in a suit and we were in hoodies and jeans on a dining room table like, you all right, mate?
That would have been me on my first day as well. I'd have been great. Like heels, tailored dress, and you guys would have been like comfy clothes. I'm like, I really missed the mark on this. I guess for those 99 people on your waiting list, what would be like the advice you would give them when it comes to like sending an application in to work with you guys?
We are core values driven.
Okay.
Very, very core values. I can teach you debits and credits. I can teach you tax rules. I can teach you how to be an accountant, but I can't teach you to be one of ours.
Okay.
And for us, it's very, very person-driven, person-centered. A lot of the people, because of the content we create, actually lean into us because they either have very serious anxiety, like financial anxiety, trauma, they're scared of someone knocking on the door. Maybe there's been like some sort of financial trauma in their life, or they sit somewhere on a neurodivergent spectrum. Like, because we create content in the places that we do, we attract people who are doing non-stereotypical jobs.
Okay, yeah.
But taxes don't discriminate. Everybody has to do a tax return from, we've got clients who won Bake Off all the way through to our local village beekeeper. Like, we don't specialize. It's core values driven inwards, but also internally as well. And so if you're on the waiting list, if you're looking for a job in 2023 to be an accountant, it's so much more soft skill focused. I want to know, can you sit in front of a client who you have followed on Instagram and not be weird? Like, just make them feel really comfortable, make them feel like we see inside people's businesses in a way that very often they don't even let their friends and family inside. It's so intimate. And so making sure that people feel comfortable, they trust you, you're communicating with them in a way that makes sense. Like, if your inbox is a hot mess, I'm not going to email you, you know?
Yeah, well, that's fair enough.
It is a hot mess. And so it's so much more about soft skills, and that's it for us.
It's really strange that you say that, because when you think of accountants, you don't think of them as having any
soft skills
whatsoever.
Yeah.
Or like people that are good at stuff like that. And then that's like the people that I went to school with that became accountants or worked in banking and finance stereotypically didn't have soft skills when they were younger.
Oh, most people literally imagine them as like autistic.
Yeah.
Like, what, they just want to sit behind a computer and not talk to anyone all day.
I mean, to be fair, sometimes that does sound like the dream. Bliss. Yeah. I would sit there with earphones in and just be like, please no one speak to me. And I was never good at maths, despite the stereotype. It was never in my plan. But I was going to say, I was like, was that tips for clients, or was that tips for your employees then? Because
yeah.
Do you also need, like, can you be selective with your clients now that you get so many?
So when a client accepts a proposal, they also accept core values.
Okay.
So that's very much us just being like, this is the way that we work. And one of the best bits about being self-employed is that you get to choose who you work with too, right?
Yeah.
And it's your opportunity to drive your values up and down the supply chain. And so if you've had an experience with an accountant that wasn't great, like, spend your money somewhere else. Spend it somewhere that you're like, if I'm going to have to pay money to get my tax return done, I want to spend it somewhere where like this ecosystem makes me feel really good. And I know that you treat your team really well, and I know that they're happy and I love them, and I'm building really sustainable long-term relationships with them. There are certain things in business that you have to spend money on. For a lot of people, accounting is one of them. And it's basically my job to make sure that you understand the value proposition, that you understand how I treat the team, and that you understand that every single person that you speak to is not only insanely qualified and a great person, but also happy, well, safe, and financially looked after inside and outside of work.
I say that like I don't actually know. Like I didn't read my own proposal. Like I should have already known that, to be fair. But I guess when you were saying about how in 3 years you're about to come up to £1 million turnover, you're still in your 20s, right?
Yeah.
That must be like terrifying to know that there's that much money like coming in and out. And I mean, if you're an accountant, it's... I always find accountants aren't necessarily good at managing their own money.
Or...
Oh, okay. We're like two accountants
married to each other who also run a business. We are like...
Is it hard to like live and work and be married to somebody all of the time? Like you're with each other 24/7.
It's literally the best thing in the world ever, ever.
I find it like there are two types of couples in the world.
It's definitely Marmite. And some people say like, oh, I could never do it. And I'm like, well, I do actually like my husband. So that's probably the difference, Karen.
That's probably why I said that, oh, I couldn't do it because I actually don't have a husband. Yeah. So like, but like, I know I have friends that like live and work together and stuff. And I'm always like, but that must be a challenge in itself, because how do you keep personal things personal and professional things professional?
I guess for us as well, because we met at work.
Okay.
We've almost always had some sort of like overlap, and we've sort of had to have like really, really good boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
But it really makes it long-term. You're building something that's yours. It's very, very much one of the best bits about being self-employed is that you can't sell a job, and you can't pass a job down to your children. Sell a business, pass a business down to your children. And when you're sharing that with someone that you love, that wealth, that tangible thing that you're building is for both of you. And it almost removes a lot of the sacrifice. I actually can't imagine doing it without my husband, because I'm not actually sure I'd have one. Like I am so driven. I work almost toxic amounts, and actually that's for us. But if I didn't work with him, I feel like that would breed other things.
Oh, when you put it like that, it sounds really sweet and romantic. And I'm kind of like, oh, why am I such a like toxic? Like, no, nobody speaks to me. My job is for me, like stay away from everything I do. But I mean, like, you know, you've come from an apprenticeship, and we never taught about finances in school. I did an economics A-level, apart from some weird bell curve, couldn't tell you anything else.
Yep.
And how we worked out the economics of a country by the price of a Big Mac.
Yeah.
That's the only thing I can tell you about numbers and finance. So like, why is it that you don't think we're taught these actual life skills when it comes to money in schools?
My short answer is I'm really, really working on it. Because female representation and lack of it was a really strong part of my journey, I am now a director and trustee of AAT, which is the governing body for accountants in the UK. And again, that you can be what you can see is really important. I was the youngest ever person to do that. And I feel like that's very similar to a lot of the things that you've done. And I feel like you do it and you don't mind being the first, in the hope that you won't be the last. This year, there was like record numbers of submissions for people coming into the program to also do the same thing. And within AAT, there's a lot of government lobbying to get this stuff taught at school. And I can't even, we've taken on 700 clients. Up until today's day, I have onboarded every single one of them. So I've spoken to a lot more than 700. We don't have a 100% acceptance rate. Nearly every single person I've spoken to in the last 3 years has mentioned a feeling or an emotion before they've ever mentioned a number. We as British people do not talk about numbers. We don't talk about finances. And that's because it's not taught in the curriculum. So we're taught that either it's not relevant or that it's so awful. We're just not talking about it. Yeah. And so even pay matrices. So one of my biggest icks about the top 75 was very inconsistent pricing on gender, on whether or not you went to university. Even if someone had a degree in like geography, they would get more, they'd be on more than you. Managers based on age were paid less.
Love that.
And so we have a completely transparent pay matrix. And so our own internal payroll team do our payroll. Every single person could literally, by going down qualification and experience, work out how much every other person in the company is on. It's one of my proudest achievements, because that's where we remove all of that stuff, is by saying, look at this. We onboard people and we show them our P&L. because we're about to hit £1 million turnover.
Yeah.
But it's actually irrelevant because we could be running at a loss, you know?
Yeah.
And we're not, but we could be. And so that transparency only comes from being shown it by great role models in your life. And I really do believe that starts with education, because generationally we struggle as well. But so many people that I have those conversations with will say an emotion before they ever say a number.
I bet your employee retention rate is great.
So from our employee waiting list, we have a 100%.
Yeah, because like it's, I mean, I talk about pay matrix and scales and stuff all the time, and lack of pay transparency. People list jobs and they don't include the pay in job adverts. Yep. It's like my biggest annoyance when it comes to job applications. And like, in even
and
in
the
finance
markets
roles.
Change as well. Like, it's a candidate driven market. I wouldn't waste my time applying for a job if it didn't have a salary. Move on, next.
I have openly told employers that, and funny enough, they don't like, they don't take very well to it.
Because LinkedIn did not like you. I remember that. Remember.
Yeah. Whoops, my bad. From the TikTok?
Yeah, because it went mad on LinkedIn as well.
Did it?
Yeah.
I did not see that. For anyone that doesn't know, I did Talk 20s 2 years ago. Yeah. And
was it one of your most viral TikToks ever?
Yeah, it was like 1.5 million views on TikTok, and people were seething and foaming at the mouth that I thought it was not rude to discuss pay between employees or like creatives or whatever. So you knew that you weren't underselling yourself. And I think it was beneficial for women, people of color, people from disabilities, like the LGBT, and people were fuming. Funny enough, the people that were most fuming were men.
I literally just wrote an article for a magazine which was about why Gen Z's make great employees. All the men in the comment section.
There's a lot of TikToks on it as well about Gen Z, having Gen Z employees and then being like, but being very good at setting work-life balance boundaries. And like when people be like, I've got a really good development opportunity for you. And they're like, are you going to pay me for it?
Yeah.
Then I'm not going to do it. Like, and I love watching those because I think I wish I was like that when I was younger. Because I used to be such a yes man. Which is weird. You would not believe it now talking to me that I was like literally the biggest yes man. But like, you know, what is the, like, well, because we're not taught it in schools, there's so many misconceptions about what it's like to be self-employed. Mm-hmm. Parents didn't want me to do it because they didn't think I could get a mortgage. There was a whole thing about like, you know, paying in your pension and job security. Yep. I don't think there's any such thing as job security in 2023. And if you can make it for yourself, then why not? But why is there so many misconceptions about how self-employed people can't have the same access to finances that employed people can have?
Again, I think it comes down to lack of education. So as well as our practice, we do mortgage advice, because if you can have one conversation with your accountant who can also do your mortgage, like in your financial year, and say, Sharon, if you slam it between now and the end of the year, this is your search criteria for Zoopla. That's all you want as a self-employed person, right?
That's the only sentence I want to hear.
Yeah, it's like, and that is the only, and I think for a really long time, lots of people have built financial services up to be this massive thing that's really unattainable and inapproachable, whether it's for me as a young person trying to decide my career or somebody as a consumer that needs to do it. And that's why we're dominating the market. I listened to the episode that you did with your manager about being a HLD girl. And I was like, that's what I want people to say about me. I literally want the best and most creative talent in the industry to say, she's my accountant. Because we're breaking it down. It's pink. It's approachable. It's friendly. It's like using actual words, not scary words like dividends and corporation tax. And it's making it feel really approachable. And one of the biggest things for us was, how can we bring in more and more and more financial services to make sure that these people are having one conversation with one person that they know, like, and trust, and getting every single need met. And the reality is that so many professional services have been like this for so long. People don't talk to each other. Accountants aren't saying, how can we bring all of this in and make it this really holistic, person-centered service? It's almost been like an attitude problem within the financial services sector itself.
Do you know what? When I said to people that my accountant was coming on my podcast, they were like, really?
A good one.
They were like, what? Or when I said, oh yeah, I'm going for dinner with my accountant afterwards, they were like, is that supposed to be some sort of euphemism? I was like, no, like, do people not do this? But then that's like, that's what I mean about you guys, you changing stereotypes. Because I think, you know, when it comes to big things like that, I get anxiety because it's a lot. And like, you know, because I wasn't taught it and I wasn't taught, like no one else taught me it. How am I supposed to manage it? And then when I saw your viral TikTok clip, which probably also riled a lot of men up, about people getting their boob jobs, was it tax deductible?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Still my favorite clip to this day. That's how I actually found you.
It was wild. So what did you think? I'd be really interested. What did you think when you saw it?
I get it. And I don't even think I understand it because of what I do now. I think I've got it because it's part of their job. The same way that, you know, if you'd paid for a qualification, like if you paid for your AAT and you were a self-employed accountant, that's tax deductible, right? Same way if I needed to, if I was a taxi driver, my taxi is tax deductible. Yeah. OnlyFans content creators and boobs just make sense.
Does make sense. And this is the thing, right? And I think it was scary. It was really scary, especially when you've worked so hard and like this is very, very much, we don't specialize in the type of clients that we work with. We don't exclusively have a portfolio of OnlyFans creators. And so like, it was scary to go viral for like people had so many opinions on it. And it was so, we knew that hook would go viral. Yeah. Like me and Gabby went for lunch before we recorded the podcast and she said like, can we talk about it? And so we very much knew it had the potential to go viral before we even spoke about it. And so it was very, very scary. And I think what a lot of people didn't see is as an accountant, we have scaled really rapidly. I do have a great team. I'm also a great accountant and I'd never, ever risk that. And so what people don't see behind the scenes is we literally had the internal standards team of our governing body investigate and do a start to finish audit of that tax return before we ever spoke about it publicly. We were speaking to the PR team and the press team of ACCA and AAT to say, can we speak about this publicly? I know you've done loads of work about the FCA regulations and making sure that the people who are talking about this stuff online is regulated. And that's something that I take very seriously as well. So the actual story was that we had an OnlyFans creator as a client, we still have, and she wanted to expense a boob job. And she said, can I expense a boob job? We said, absolutely not. Obviously not. No, you cannot. And she said, well, I've read the rules. Because we said, this does not wholly and exclusively relate to your business.
Yeah.
You get personal use of your boobs. And she said, I've read the rules. And actually, if I can prove, like you say, a degree is a great example of that, or extra qualification, I can prove that my income will go up as a direct result of spending this money. And therefore, I want to make the claim.
And they say people that do OnlyFans are not that intelligent.
Mm-hmm.
That is something only a smart person would think about.
Yeah, she's like, I've read the T's and C's. And so we were like, okay, we need to talk to HMRC. So we worked with HMRC to understand case law, reference it, how can we interpret that? Because tax laws weren't written when people did, even what we do as jobs, right? Like I make money from content creation. People, that wasn't a job, that wasn't a career. When we were at school, it wasn't a career when the tax law was written. And so we do need change, we do need reform. And it's my job as an accountant to interpret rules that were literally written 50 years ago and apply that to an OnlyFans creator expensing a boob job.
My boob job was far less complicated than all of, and I'm so glad that HMRC did not have to get involved when it came to my boob job. But like, when I listened to it, I was like, but I get it, it just makes sense, like without even having to read the T's and C's, but you know.
And that was, it was scary.
Yeah.
Like as I don't take myself too seriously, but that was pushing the boundaries of like things that you want to go viral for. And again, resulted in being interviewed on TV by Jeremy Kyle. Like it was a bit stressful. And I feel like there were so many, we had such a phenomenal positive response from people that said, I didn't actually care what you were talking about, but you listened to her.
Yeah.
Like she came to you and said, I know your default reaction was no, but look at this. And so many people don't feel heard. So many people who do OnlyFans work or even content creation. Like imagine if you were an ASMR slime content creator, would you walk into an accountancy practice with a brown carpet and say, this is what I do for a living? No, but you see me on TikTok talking about this stuff and creating content and saying, I make money. Like every single month I share how much money I make as a content creator online. And if you saw me doing that, you'd probably think, oh yeah, like you get it. I don't even need to explain that. I probably have 17 forms of revenue and I get gifted stuff that I don't know what to do with. You don't need to explain that stuff.
Yeah, do you know what actually, because I was going to come on to about how you had written an ebook about tax guide for influencers. And people, when I get it all the time on a certain publication online, there are comments about how being an influencer isn't a real job. To some extent, I get it, because you don't get up and go to whatever and you don't have to do a really extreme physical intensive job. It depends what you do. Yeah. But if you're an OnlyFans creator, yeah, it's a very different story. But for me personally, you don't have to do anything that's massively labor intensive. But there are, I would say, so many rules, regulations, things you have to look out for. You still pay your tax just the same as everyone else. But why did you specifically want to write a guide for influencers?
So the guide actually came from, I'm quite like a strategic person. And so I understood market segmentation. I understood, I'm a 90s kid. I consume TikTok, Instagram, YouTube content. I was like, actually, if I can choose who I get to work with, I want to work with you. I want to work with people who are in boy bands, people who just want to bake off, people like you. Like, that's who I would absolutely love to work for. And so the problem there is that influencers are incredible and content creators do everything themselves, because very often they start it as a hobby. So they have no money, no budget. There is no budget. They are the talent. They are the lighting department. They're the editing department, sound department, tax team, everything. They do everything.
Yeah.
Because they have to start. Like, I made content for free for 2 years before I ever monetized it. That's no different to anybody else ever. Everybody normally starts doing it for free. And so they have to learn how to do everything for free. And so the problem for me was that lots of them don't want an accountant until they absolutely have to get one, or until that like time cost benefit pays off. But that means that they're making really good money. And so I had to find a way and build and develop a product that served that market that actually wasn't me. And for me, that was the tax guide for influencers. And so since then, we've taken on huge content creation agencies who literally gift it to their talent as part of their welcome package, because they're like, again, the episode that you did with your manager, people aren't taught it. People aren't talking about it. And actually, if we're able to build strategic relationships with management agencies that say, we'll take you on. But again, one of our core values is making sure that you are well, happy and safe inside and outside of your work. Have you thought about speaking to an accountant? Why don't you speak to ours? That is us passing our core values down to our clients and making sure that they are doing the good work and having those conversations for us.
Do you know what, a very random thought that just popped into my head. This is so bizarre. When, I don't think many people know this, but when you leave the Love Island villa, it might be the same with a lot of reality TV shows. They sit you down and they show you lots of videos. One of them is financial planning and accountancy. And I said, I cannot watch this for half an hour because this is the most boring video I've ever seen. If anyone needs a new person to record it, because then I might actually watch it. I literally sat there and was like, I was still in a bikini in Mallorca. I was like, I can't watch this. I'm sorry. I really tried. And it was just literally brown carpet vibes with a weird whiteboard talking to me about dividends and stuff. And I was like, no, I'm out.
I think it's so much part of the problem. And it doesn't matter if you're a business owner, you want to be an accountant, or you want to start your own practice. It just feels stiff and horrible and like almost clinical.
Yeah.
In a way, it's not about you. It's not about you. And so even making sure that our team are literally KPI'd on touch points, how they can add value at every touch point, and literally the relationship that they have with clients.
Yeah.
Because that's all you care about. You care about how we make you feel.
Yeah.
And you trust us to do everything else. We'll do tax return, we'll do your accounts, we'll do everything else.
Put it this way, I much preferred getting a smear test than watching that video. Like, it was that painful. So, you know, maybe you should write a pitch to ITV and be like, I've heard that your video is extremely painful. If you need someone to actually make it a little bit more pink, then I'm your girl. But no, I've honestly really enjoyed like how transparent you've been about your career. And like, I love consuming your content, mostly because it's pink and it doesn't make finances and listening to people talk about money scary, even though it does scare me that you get up at 5 a.m. every morning. Like, every single, I was like, oh, I get up at 6. I'm really go-getter. And I look at your story and I'm like, nope. But I can't get up at 5. I've tried. I really have. But I've got a final question. And I did tell you at the beginning, so maybe you've thought about an answer, but it always catches people on edge. So what would you say to people that doubted your ability to be a successful accountant based on the fact that you were a young woman who didn't initially go to university?
Two words. Watch me.
Well, she's going to say something else. No, I mean, to be fair, you've pretty much proved them all wrong.
Yeah.
And it's insane what you've been able to do. But I guess it means you've just tapped into a market and showed a finance industry that they don't have to be so clinical, traditional and boring in order to be successful.
And there's no stopping it, right? Like you can't stay still. And talking about lists like the top 100, the top four, that's where we're going. I firmly believe there is space for us in the top 100. Like, move out the way. You know, I feel like that is the trajectory that we're going in financially and how they score it. Like, we're not far away from it. We're launching audit later this year so we can work with some of the biggest companies that have like £10 million turnover plus. And that's next step onto top 100. And it'll be pink.
I can't wait for that local beekeeper that you do the account books for to be awesome. Like, my accountant's 100, top 100 accountancy firm, because that would just be the most wild thing ever.
Just selling his honey on Facebook. It's great. So cute.
I love that. Yeah. You know, so many wholesome businesses nowadays. I bet, did that come from a lockdown thing, just really randomly?
So when I meet people who are employed and self-employed at the same time, it's a side hustle. My favorite thing to do is say to them, I'm going to challenge you. I want to know the difference between your day job and your side hustle. He is the one to beat. He is a police officer by day, beekeeper by night. That's He's like so a really random. Fun superhero.
That is so random.
Yeah.
Beekeeping. Bees terrify me. So that's a no. I love honey, no, but bees terrify me. But I mean, I guess if you're a police officer, you can't really be scared of much. But yeah, like, no, that is, I'm like, my mind's blown. Yeah, because at least like with my old day job, there is some correlation between what I do now and my old day job. But that is just, that was just a hobby that got out of hand, isn't it, really?
Yeah. Just loves bees.
No, that's fair enough. But like, honestly, thank you so much for being so frank, open, honest and pink. You've literally coordinated with the cushions and I'm here for it.
Thanks for having me.